how you said this one writes itself.
Like, we're doing a podcast.
This one speaks itself.
Yeah, sorry.
Dude, when I saw them getting down in the first quarter, like at the very, very beginning, you never get that feeling of like, oh man, is this happening again?
Okay. When Rondo was banging in threes.
Yeah, he was banging them home.
You know how I feel about this Bulls team as a whole? You got Paul Zipser looking like Larry Bird in the corner with that leaning three. That's what I kept saying to myself, not again. But the Bulls threw the first punch, but the Raptors threw the last punch. That's the most cliche thing you could say of this entire game. How many game stories tomorrow are going to leave with that?
The Bulls
threw the first punch.
Yeah, and then Robin Lopez, you know, throws the first. I mean, even Serge Ibaka, like, he connected on his, but Robin Lopez missed it. So,
why do you want to fight a guy that's, like, survived and lived through a Congo war?
Yeah,
I don't want to fight a guy like that.
That doesn't really make any sense to me. You know, maybe there's like some. I remember Matt Barnes saying that there's like a perception, or he said that Serge Ibaka is like a fake tough dude.
I laughed at that.
Yeah, I think that was a couple of years ago because he was on the Clippers when he said that. And
he was in a dark place, Matt Barnes. You know, Clippers were they were just on the come up then. So I understand.
I know Matt Barnes
is like, yeah, he's a tough guy for real though.
Yeah, Matt Barnes on the Warriors now. He's just like, yeah, man, Serge Ibaka is tough as hell.
There's a lot to start with this game. I mean, to break it down in terms of, you know, there's a lot more than just a fight, snapping 11 game losing streak, the Bulls playing way over their heads, and we finally saw the real Bulls tonight. Yeah, it was 11 game losing streak.
Wow.
Right? I looked that up multiple times because I go, come on, man. 11 games? Are you kidding me? I know it's a punchline joke, but 11 games.
Yeah, I
games?
Didn't know it was 11 games. Yeah. Damn. We're finally over the hump, man. We're on to the other side. I think this is going to be a big win for the remainder of the season. I mean, it obviously impacts like the Chicago playoff chances, but just for the morale and fighting through stuff. And people always talk about, you know, you have to find ways to grit out these games with these super close games. So the Raptors finally being able to do that with Kyle Lowry is a big deal, man.
You got to hit all the buzzwords, man. Character win for the Raptors tonight. A lot of heart. Momentum. You got to hit all these buzzwords. That's what
grit and grind.
You got to get like Jack and Matt here, you know? No, I love how Jack, I saw you tweet that out. Matt tries to say something and Jack's like, oh my God.
He speaks over. Yeah, I swear he's doing it on purpose. Especially at the end of the game. I swear he's doing it on purpose, man.
You got to love his passion, though.
Because Matt's like, the Raptors win DeMar DeRozan. This is the greatest game that has ever happened in Raptors history.
Okay, so in the context of the Eastern Conference, this win now means the Raptors are a half game back of the Washington Wizards.
Woo.
For third place in the East. That's a pretty big deal. The Raptors have a considerably easier schedule down the stretch, too, in comparison to the Wizards. So third seed, I think it's doable. It's not that it's doable. I think they're going to get it. Let me put it like that.
Yeah. No. It's happening. It's happening. I mean, the Wizards have one of the harder schedules in the league going forward, and plus most of their games are away games. I think they only have like four home games or something like that, something crazy like that. And the Raptors get a nice mixture of home and away, but every team they play until the Cavs, which is the last game of the season, is a below 500 team.
So thank you, Atlantic Division.
Yeah, thank you, Eastern Conference. Woo!
So third seed should be.
Yeah.
Should be where the Raptors finish.
Yeah. Which isn't that bad. Because the third seed is essentially the same thing as the second seed. It's just that you play one game. It's that seven game series against the second seed. It's going to, that game seven is going to be
Celtics,
away.
Man. Give me IT4. Give me that undersized Celtics team. We can feast on them.
I could definitely, yeah. But they could definitely beat them. You know, Kyle Lowry is better than Isaiah Thomas.
By the way, you know how hard it was to not open this podcast like a Dan Le Batard style rant and just go off on the Bulls. And
give it to me again.
Yeah,
give it to me again. Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler. He is a waiter for the Toronto Raptors, giving us the victory. What's his name? What's his name? Valentine. He has no Valentines. Jim Hoiberg, you mean Jim Glacier? I don't know, CEO, man. I don't know how he does it. He must have like a script, right?
I'd imagine him and Poppy and they just get together and they write this stuff out in the morning. Right. Before they come out. He'd probably have a field day with Paul Zipser, whatever. His name's irrelevant. Go home.
Paul Zipser! Paul Noser!
That's some Love Third stuff. You know what that kills me, though, is when you look at this Bulls team play on so many other nights, and if you're watching them, you either A, really love NBA, or B, you don't really like yourself. I know they've been hot recently, but they're a difficult team to watch just because of the style of basketball they play. They're trying to play pace and space, but when you got guys like Michael Carter-Williams playing, that's a problem. He's awful, by the way.
Yeah, he's actually pretty bad. And then it also speaks volumes about Cameron Payne, where Cameron Payne is not even playing. He's in the D-League right now, and they traded away.
Man.
They traded away two starters for him.
Taj Gibson and McDermott.
Was McDermott starting? Yeah, so two starters for a guy that's in the D-League, that is a terrible trade.
Well, you look at the Bulls tonight, too. They were, 14-37 from three. That's very uncharacteristic for them. I know that was, they were, at one point, 11-22 or something like that. It was ridiculous. And then they came back to life in the third and fourth quarter, where we saw the real Chicago Bulls. Is that where the Raptors playing better defense and the intensity got up, or was it the Bulls falling back down to earth?
It was both, but especially in the second, I think it was the middle to the end of the second quarter. It was around the 6-minute mark of the second quarter where the intensity, the defensive intensity ramped up. I got to hit all the buzzwords again. Right? But this is actually what happened. You'd see the Raptors getting underneath their opponent, right? And it's not necessarily something we're used to seeing before the All-Star break. Man, I'm trying to
think. It goes a lot deeper, too, than just the Ibaka fight. Dude, P.J. Tucker was a beast tonight. Debo was all over the place. Locking down Jimmy Butler like that, that's not an easy task. And I know Butler still got his points, but you saw at the end of the game the shot he put up. At the end of the regulation, sorry.
And at the end of the game, those were both contested heavily by P.J. Tucker.
And he plays a physical brand, man. For those people that haven't watched him, he's been like this his entire career. But he's also been all over the place. You know, he went to Europe. He had to reinvent himself a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix, you don't see him as much. But this is how he's played his entire career. And now I think on the grand stage, which is Toronto, because, you know.
The national stage, my friend. Well, national stage. And basically every
offensive and defensive efficiency. So, you know what that means. Title contender.
Basically every game he plays now is on the national stage in Canada. I bet you there's more fans in Toronto than there are in Phoenix.
Oh, I'll agree with that wholeheartedly.
Right. Plus, you know, you get to play for a winning team. People, my favorite thing about Toronto is that they love grinders. You know, I think that's a hockey thing. And I think I mentioned this before where it's just they love grinders absolutely to the core. So his defense, you know, he scored 8 points this game. Hit a couple threes. But just the defense, people love watching excellent defense in Toronto. I was thinking about imagine if the Grizzlies existed in Toronto, they would never trade anybody.
Because folk heroes.
Yeah, exactly. They would become folk heroes. And PJ Tucker is getting towards that. I wouldn't say folk hero, but fan favorite. It's definitely every year there's a fan favorite. Okay, last year was Bismack Biyombo. This year it's gonna be PJ Tucker. Book it.
Oh, 100%. The narrative's almost gonna come too where the Raptors must re-sign P.J. Tucker. We're almost getting to that point.
Yeah, the heart and soul of the team. How could we possibly lose him to another team? He's not even making that much money. I'm not sure of the exact contract right now.
He's making peanuts right now.
Right? And he's a legit, legit piece for this team. I mean, he played how many minutes? He played 33 minutes.
33 minutes tonight.
Right? Damari Carroll with 18. You know, what? I mean, even Norman Powell only had 16. He's pretty much circumvent the entire rotation now, and he's a major, major piece.
Well, he cleaned up on the glass, too. 10 defensive rebounds. A lot of those came in the fourth quarter in overtime, and for the most part, when Ibaka was out of the game, which was huge because they needed somebody to help clean up on the glass. You saw guys like Tucker and even DeRozan getting back in there. It was just – it was awesome. This was peak Raptors minus Lowry, and now insert Lowry, and that'll be your playoff Raptors.
Yes. Yes.
That's an optimistic approach, but that's what you're hoping for.
Yeah, man, I'm excited for that. One of the best thing or biggest things for that Tucker lineup is he was playing the four, right? It was him, DeMar DeRozan, Van Vliet, Corey Joseph, and Patrick Patterson. Right, and he was playing the four, and he just became the rebounder for that team, and he skies for the rebounds, man. And any 50-50 rebound Or it's his. Yeah, it's his. I wonder what the size of his hands are, because I know that like most good rebounders have massive, massive hands, and I wish somebody would measure them.
We can probably find that if we go back to Draft Express or somewhere. You know, we'll look for that after. I'm pretty certain we can find that somewhere.
Right, because, yeah, he's able to get 50-50 balls a lot, and I know, like, JV is able to get a lot of 50-50 balls, and, like, Kawhi Leonard is be able to get every 50-50 ball he puts his hands on. Same with, like, Rudy Gobert. And those guys have huge hands, right?
Yeah, massive.
Right, so I wonder how big his hands are.
at least me, I've started this pod, like, frantic fan mode.
Right.
We can, like, slow it down a bit here and probably pick away at a few things that we observe with the Raptors. I mean, how about that rotation? What's up with the hockey changes? Oh, it's on the first half where Casey's going 5 in, 5 out.
I don't know what he's doing right now, because, you know, with the roster rotations, what it seems like he's doing is it's like almost like a tryout. He's like doing beginning of the season stuff at the end of the season. You know, like, so your Patrick Patterson will get. Patrick Patterson at one point only had like 8 minutes, and then he played like 16 minutes in a row to end the game.
Yeah, he closed out the game.
Right, but then you also have DeLon Wright gets 5, and then Van Fleet gets 19, right? And if we're looking at a game, you know, if we're looking at the Detroit game or or the Pacers game, like, those minutes might be inversed, right? So I think he's just playing.
I have a theory with that, too.
I think he's just riding whoever's hot. I don't think it's a specific match. I mean, it's kind of a specific matchup, but not really. Like, I really, really, really need to go back and, like, really look at it to see if he's matching it, like, matching personnel to the opposing personnel, or if he's just whoever's hot stays on the court and we're just going to ride those dudes.
I think he's just trying to basically see who he can play when Lowry gets back. And I think it's a huge gamble on his part, because he just wants to get the defense right. Mm-hmm. And basically what they're hoping is that once Lowry gets back, that's the antidote to their offensive problems. Problem is right now their bench is they can't score. And that's usually Kyle Lowry's role. And the problem at times with their starting five is that they're too dependent on DeMar DeRozan. So I think what he's trying to figure out is who can play defense and playoff-style defense. And once Lowry gets back in, we're going to get points anyways, because he's that much of an offensive dynamo. So. Right. I think it's kind of a gamble on his part, but that's the way I see it when I look at it.
Yeah, and you said that, like, they depend a lot on DeMar DeRozan on that first unit. Like, they also have Serge Ibaka for that first unit, and he actually had 16 points in this game. So imagine if he played the entirety of the game, he probably would have had, like, around 20 or 25 or something like that.
Yeah, and, easy. I mean, DeRozan finished tonight with 38 shot attempts.
Right. So he's just he's basically entering Kobe mode, and I'm going to take every single shot available.
Yeah, Jacoby DeBryant almost had 40% of almost half of the Raptor shots tonight. I think he had 40%.
So it's crazy, but that, you know, when they miss Serge Ibaka like that, then they have to depend on him. Like, they have no, I mean, JV is an option, but not really. So when you miss that Serge Ibaka to the fight, man, it's going to be difficult to win. Luckily, they pulled.
I see what you did there. Efficiency wise. I know I joked around about earlier, the Raptors are top 10 in offense and defense, joining now the San Antonio Spurs, mm-hmm. Golden State Warriors, and I don't know if the Jazz are in there. I think they're really close, though. So, you know, that's basically the trait of a title contender.
Yeah. Shh, don't tell them. Don't tell anybody yet.
A lot of NBA, like, experts and pundits were poking fun at that this week about how, you know, hey, the Raptors are for real now.
Yo, don't sleep.
Analytically.
Sleep is the cousin of death, my friends. Don't tell them anything.
It is last year.
Let them sleep. Let them sleep. And then when the Raptors, like, bring the Cavs to 7, be like, oh, who could have thought this would happen? And then, you know, we're going to be there, you know, like Kermit the Frog, sipping our teas. Like, yeah, man, they were top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency, but that's none of my business, you know.
So I'm taking it as you're buying this narrative then.
buying it, yeah.
You just, you know, you summed it up well.
Yeah, I'm in. I think it's a seriously good team. I can't think of any. Maybe the Wizards are as good, but the Wizards are starting to falter, oddly. They're like the most hot and cold team in the NBA. So it's Cavs.
They became very Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like the Cavs and then the Celtics. Or, you know, I believe the Raptors are better than the Celtics. Teams made better. Even though the record doesn't reflect that the Raptors are better, they're definitely better. And the Wizards are, you know, in a swoon. So This is the Cavs and the Raptors for me in the East, man. I'm predicting them to go to the Eastern Conference Finals again.
Oh, I'm all on board with that. And I am saying Cavs in seven as well. I'll go on record and say that all day. This team, roster breakdown-wise, like what they have, is better suited to play the Cavs than they were before.
Right.
It's not exactly analysis, but just look at it.
The only thing
they
that
match up way better.
The only thing that like is troublesome is like if Kyle Lowry wasn't injured, then we'd be able to see like the wrath of this team. And especially now that it's like that it's a right hand injury that is like that could be a serious problem. But just you got to think about it. You know, when I go to sleep, this is stuff that I think about. Kyle Lowry actually on the squad.
He's gonna make a huge difference. Huge. Even if he can't shoot that well, the fact that he can give them another perimeter threat is massive. This team needs that sorely right now. And on top of that, his ability to drive and kick is kind of, you know, he could kind of go into Jay Kidd mode and just facilitate the offense. Either way, he's helping this team immensely.
Right, and plus other teams just respect the shot, like the way he shoots from the outside. So even if he's not hitting them, there will eventually be a point where he starts hitting them or... You know, the defense are just, you know, there's only two options, so they'll always load up on Lowry and DeRozan. Basically, like last year, even though they were struggling, teams still loaded up on them and were forcing other people on the squad to beat them. But now there are other people on the squad. Serge Ibaka, say hi.
Right. So aside from Serge Ibaka, PJ Tucker, you look at their record, it's not the greatest. But obviously this team has changed when you watch them play. What's the one thing that you've observed that's changed the most for this team?
I hate to say it, but the culture really is just like, here's another catchphrase for you guys. Tough minded. All right. Scrappy. Tough minded.
Never say die attitude.
Scrappy. Yeah, never say die. Everybody brings their lunch pail and their hard hat.
Yes. To play.
But really it's like the Raptors have adopted this, this tough minded attitude, you know, where they, instead of getting down emotionally and the morale falling in the beginning of the game, they rallied back. You know, they're just like, you know, Serge Ibaka just got kicked out in this fight. We got to win this one for him. You know, it's not like, oh man, we lost our guy and we already lost Lowry. Ah, it's over. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think that's the biggest change so far because, you know, Kyle Lowry's injury, you got to find other ways to win games. Right. And you can't get down on yourself because people are out.
Well, they're digging deep.
Yeah, they're digging deep and all heart.
I think another thing, too, is the rebounding. Tonight we saw that they out-rebounded the Bulls 50-39. Again, that's just – some of it was just PJ Tucker just deciding to have a different mentality and take over the game attitude-wise. That was definitely one thing on the glass. But I think that's something the Raptors have emphasized a lot more going forward. Although I do agree with you, the culture—it's a 9-day difference. Now look when they had that players-only meeting after the horrific loss to Oklahoma City. Beautiful dime by Russell Westbrook, by the way. Mm-hmm. That was insane. But that players-only meeting they had—I'm sure Tucker, Ibaka, DeRozan—you know, a lot of these guys were piping up and saying, "What the f? We're a lot better than this. Come on, guys." And then. There's just a new leadership. There's a new voice in this locker room, and I feel like it's rejuvenated the Raptors, which is a testament to what you're saying.
Remember at the beginning of the season where we said the oldest player on the roster was Kyle Lowry?
Yep.
Right, and then, you know, if he's the old head, they kind of looking to him for advice and stuff like that. So when he's injured or where he's, like, playing poorly, like, there's no guy. Like, if you have an older player on the team that's just, like, a vet... He doesn't really matter how much he scores because he affects the team sort of on the court, but his major role is off the court. You know, if something's going on with your girl and you need somebody to talk to, or, you know, your shot's not falling, you need somebody to talk to. You're not going to talk to the best player on the team, be like, man, you know, I'm really sucking right now. And the best player on the team is going to be like, you need to make your shots, man. I'm doing all the work. But if you're talking to like the old dude that, you know, he gets in for like 5 minutes a game, he hits a three. But really, he's there to just, like, not be the babysitter, but be, like, the guy to just, like, look out for everybody and just make sure everybody's okay.
Now.
Right? So that's what I feel like PJ Tucker is that way. Every time he speaks to the to the media or to any of the players, like, he is that guy. Right?
He's Debo.
And,
I, Debo. This is his yard now.
Right? And he doesn't have, he has a major role, but it's not like he's scoring 40 a game for the team. You know, he's not the major scorer. He's a person that's, you know, scrapping away. He's a person getting rebounds. He's a utilitarian on the team. Right? And if that person is the major voice for the team, that makes you want, makes other people want to do those utilitarian things to help the team win.
For the record, he is the oldest player in the Raptors too now. He's 1 year, just shy of 1 year older than Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, but he seems significantly older in just like his mentality and the way he looks for some reason. Like, he just seems like an older dude.
Let's face it, PJ Tucker's playing in the wrong era. This is a guy that belongs on the 1980s Bad Boy Pistons, playing next to Bill Laimbeer and Dennis Rodman. That's where PJ Tucker's a perfect fit. He just happens to play in this new 3-and-D era where he fits into that too, but his attitude is all 1980s, early 1990s.
Yeah, exactly, which is great. The Raptors are just still trying to become a 90s squad, another 90s piece to make them better.
Well, that's Casey's dream, right? Play D, 90s relic basketball.
Yeah, play, you know, ISO. Play D, get rebounds, make sure you get offensive rebounds, and yeah, just play defense.
What do you make of the Raptors trying to incorporate more motion offense principles? I know we've seen them kind of run high screens with little motion cuts on the underneath the basket now. Sometimes it works. Other times it leads to long, long dead sets. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
You got to do something to get, you know, DeMar DeRozan is going to do most of it, but you got to do something else to get people open. So you can rely on those pick and rolls for Kyle Lowry. And, like, yeah, they also have, like, regular sets with Kyle Lowry, like those horn sets. But DeMar DeRozan doesn't do the exact same things as Kyle Lowry. Let's just say that. So they got to find other ways. They got to find other ways to get people open. So they got to do those motion sets, even just to get the defense moving side to side, just to get those seams open. So I'm appreciative of it, right? But, you know, it's necessary at this point. I don't think it's going to be, like, you know, a world-beating type idea, but it's definitely necessary.
Well, I think peak Raptors offense when they're trying to incorporate the motion stuff is what we saw in the fourth quarter with Corey Joseph and Patrick Patterson. Mm-hmm. Those two made such a difference for the Raptors. I mean, spacing, their ability to just kind of not necessarily crash the glass in the perimeter, but come off screens and actually force guys to switch. And they were doing that without the ball. So that was huge for them. I know DeRozan ISO was what was getting most of the hype there, but there's a lot of good things they were doing without the ball as well. And that's what helped DeRozan, you know, get the looks he's getting. Yeah, it's little things and little nuances of the game that go unnoticed to most fans because, you know, we're watching the ball. Most guys don't watch what's going on without the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that's something that's a big difference, and hopefully we'll see those two get used a lot more going forward. Although, I don't know, man. Patrick Patterson's been enigmatic, to say the least, recently.
Yeah, man, we talk about Patrick Patterson every pod. Every piece has a little bit of Patrick Patterson sprinkled into it. It's like, what is going on? But I think he's going to come through. He came through today, man. He had, what, two or three blocks?
And he had that huge putback when DeRozan missed that finger roll.
Right, so he has a place on the team, right? It's just that he shouldn't be, like, a super major piece of the team, but he is a significant part. Like, he hitting that three, getting the rebounds, small ball five. He's a bench piece, dude. That's a great bench piece that you can want.
And that's what him and Damari Carroll both are now. I don't know if they're going to have, like, concrete roles, but I guarantee you there's going to be quote-unquote moments where you have Damari Carroll or Patrick Patterson stepping up in a big way. And if you're the Raptors, you hope those are in the postseason because guys like that coming off the bench, playing in situations where they're not used to playing, but they can, and now they are, they're going to have moments. And it's just going to be a lot different for this team. And it's a big role adjustment for them as well, right? These guys are used to starting, playing 30-plus minutes a night. Mm-hmm. Now they're down to, what, anywhere from 15 to 25 a night? It's a big difference.
This is what happens when you have a Tribe Called Bench, man. When everybody on your team everybody on your team has, like, something to contribute in different scenarios, right? So that's when you're going to get games where Jakob Poeltl plays 13 minutes, so sometimes he plays 5, you know. You have Corey Joseph playing 43 minutes. Sometimes he'll only play 20. You have Van Fleet playing 19 minutes. Sometimes he'll play 5. Sometimes he'll play 25. It all depends, man. If you're playing well, Dwayne Casey is showing that he is, like, man, you just play good and you stay out there. That's all you have to do is play well. Play defense and shoot threes. And it sounds so simplistic, but really, play defense, shoot threes, hustle, And that's why he loves P.J. Tucker. And P.J. Tucker's, I wouldn't be surprised if P.J. Tucker wasn't starting sometime in the playoffs.
I think he's going to start without question. I think you'll see, I'm trying to think here. Ibaka, JV, Tucker, DeRozan, Lowry. Like, that's probably what he'll go with.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think we both want to see JV come off the bench, but this is something we've talked about at length on other pods.
Right, right. Ah, man, this is a great win. Honestly, this is probably the best win in the Raptors season.
Hey, this is going to be the one they look back on and say, this is what propelled the Raptors season forward. You know, all those cliches. I know we've been hitting buzzers and cliches tonight, so might as well keep up with it.
Propelled their season forward. You know, this is an inflection point in their season.
A gargantuan win that propelled the Raptors and changed the momentum in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. Oh, man, the buzzwords are so good.
All right, let's segue to the national schedule a bit here, because the hot topic right now is rest. Saturday night, we saw the Cavs bench pretty much everybody that was important. You know, LeBron, Kyrie, Kevin Love, they didn't play. Weeks before that, we saw the Warriors bench their players. We've seen the Spurs do it, mm-hmm. although I feel like the Spurs, Popovich just does it because, you know, he's Pop. But the point is, we've seen a lot of superstars sit in marquee games this year. Why?
Yeah,
do you agree with that?
I think it was like Saturday, the Cavs rested everybody, the big three. And then like last week, Saturday, they did the same thing. And then, you know, Adam Silver is like, he basically types up a message of like, bro. He was basically saying, it's like, what are you doing, you crazy? Stop resting fools on the weekend. We got nationally televised games.
Well, here's what he probably said. You guys not see the TV deal we just signed and all these new, you know, the salary cap boom that we just went through? That's because of the new TV deal. Nobody's watching these games if you're benching your stars. Bench them like a Tuesday night. Don't bench them in primetime games. I think that's their biggest issue.
Yeah, that is a huge issue. I mean, he really did, like, there was an actual email that was released that he sent to, like, league offices encouraging, like, owners to be involved in that resting situation, right? So... It's difficult, man, because there's nationally televised games like every day at this point. It's hard to get away with resting people, especially if people are showing up in MSG, right? And you're supposed to be playing the Cavs, and LeBron isn't playing, Kyrie Irving isn't playing, Kevin Love isn't playing, and they're not playing because it's, you know, they're. Their doctors are saying, like, they should not be playing this game. Or it's, like, a back-to-back, and, like, it's the second game of the back-to-back, and it's, like, you know, you're more likely to get injured then. Or if it's, like, four games in 5 nights or something like that, like, they're going to rest them, you know? So it's hard to really suss out the solution.
I think the solution is pretty simple. They got to go back, and they got to redo the schedule. They can't be doing these four games and 6 nights and back-to-backs. Like, they got to spread it out more, and I know they're going to argue that, you know, okay, well, we got to fit it all in this certain amount of calendar of the calendar year, TV rights, all that stuff. But it's twofold here. If the players want to make all this money, they got to play in these games. And if the owners want to make all this money, they got to work with the players a bit here too, right? I feel like it's just like the never-ending CBA argument, but has to happen.
What do you think about reducing the number of games?
I'm okay with it because I don't think there's enough good teams in the league anyways. I feel like there's 10 to 12 teams that are so far ahead of everybody else that if you reduce those games, you're just going to put more importance on them having to win these games early as opposed to, man, come on, let's face it. Nobody gets up for playing the Nets in a Wednesday night in March.
Like, that's probably so everybody plays 82 and the Nets just play like 50 games, you know, and we just less Nets games in general. There's no more Nets.
The Nets are bringing guys off the street to maintain their 11-man rotation. KJ McDaniels hasn't been playing basketball. He just came in. He's in their rotation. Come on. It's bad.
KJ McDaniels has had moments, man.
Yeah, way back when.
When he was on the 76ers, he had moments. Oh, that was like 3 years ago, but still.
You just can't do it. The other side, too, for the teams, you could take the Warriors approach what we saw last year. Just absolutely throttle teams in the first half and third quarter and then sit your guys for the whole fourth quarter.
Yeah, the whole fourth quarter. But you have to be be good enough to do that.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the Cavs are good enough to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Cavs are good enough to do that, man. Yeah, I'm thinking about maybe they should reduce the number of games. Just the more and more I've been thinking about it, if you reduce the number of games, you kind of do all the things we're talking about artificially. So, like, there's less back-to-backs. Or maybe there'll just be no back-to-backs. Just eliminate the back-to-backs. No more back-to-backs. Right? And those four games and five nights, those maybe it would become, like, three and four nights or something like that. Just make it, you just have to, there's too many games in succession on the schedule. Right? You can get, like, back-to-back, and then you have, like, 2 days off, and then you have three games in four nights. You know, that probably doesn't exist right now, but, like, that's just an extreme example for, like, just to show how, ludicrous the schedule can get. If you just reduce the number of games, you know, maybe you don't have four games and five nights. Maybe you only have, like, one three-game and four nights, and back-to-backs no longer exist, and everybody's happy. Well,
additionally, if you're going to reduce the games, I'll be a bit generous here. I'll say they'll take away six games if they reduce the schedule. Mm-hmm. Go from 82 to 76. Another idea I think they should throw in there is during the football season, we know the NFL's king. Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football's primetime games, they draw insane ratings. Right. In comparison to what a general game would on, like, a Tuesday night. If I'm the NBA, how about we just don't schedule any games on Monday night during the football season, because why is it going to hurt our ratings, you know?
Yeah, but then it's
bump the games off on, like, a Tuesday, on Wednesday, Thursday. Just bump them on off days of the football schedule so you can try and draw ratings more on those games, because when you get more ratings, you're making more money, more mm-hmm. eyes to the TV. Like, it's just – it's all a ratings game for them to draw money, right? Okay. So why compete with the NFL on those days?
Okay, that makes sense.
Don't play any Sunday games, but just evade the Monday game just during the season. Then when the season's done, hop right back on that. Like, they've tried to make this whole Saturday night primetime thing that where they've mm-hmm. been advertising a lot more this past year. At least I feel like I've seen it a lot more.
Yeah, yeah, me
too. So why not do that? Push that a little harder during the football season, something, you know?
Okay.
That's what the NFL's been so king at, is that, you know, once the a week, rarity, Sunday yeah, and Monday Sunday. Are football days.
But then you also got Thursday every once in a while. And
those games got to go. Those are god-awful.
They have what? They have Sunday, Monday, Thursday. Don't they also have another day sometimes, like Tuesday? I swear they have Tuesdays every once in a while.
No, they have they'll have the Thursday – sorry, not Thursday. They'll have the odd Saturday game during the holidays.
Ah, yeah, yeah, Saturday.
If, like, there's, like, a Christmas game or something like that.
Right,
but so that's, I'm not saying just play, you know, don't play Mondays, period. Mm-hmm. But I think during the football season, they should explore maybe, you know, moving off those days a bit.
So it's like Nets, Timberwolves on Sundays.
Yeah, I see. I'd be good with that. Like, okay. if it's Patriots, Packers on Monday Night Football, and you have, I don't know, Cavs, Warriors.
Right.
Tell me who you're watching. The majority of the world, of North American sports world, is going to watch Patriots, Packers.
Right, okay.
I hate to be that guy, but that's how it's going to work. So why not bump that game off onto something else? I just think they gotta put these games in a better scheduled spot.
So if you're the NBA, you're okay with being basically bullied off of certain days?
People could take that perception as being bullied off. I think it's just more strategic on their part.
Okay. That's an interesting concept. I was saying, I was just toying around. I don't know how many games this is specifically, but I was just toying around with, like, you just do, like, Monday, Wednesday, Friday for basketball. You know, then you have, like, Sunday for football or whatever. You know what I mean?
I know it's an out-there idea, but...
Yeah, that was just, like, I was... Pretty much every podcast is talking about this. That's part of the reason why we're talking about this. But also, the leaked letter that went out is pretty interesting. Because you never really... That, like, rarely happens. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how many games that is, specifically. I'd have to look at my calendar. I'd have to recalibrate some things. But I'm pretty sure that's a game, like, that's a reduction, right? And
it is.
And having it just on, like, 3 days, that's pretty nice, man. You just get a couple of days of, like, a rest. Rest, you get to rest Tuesday, right? You get your rest on a Thursday. And then Saturday, Sunday, you got no games. Maybe they want to do games on the weekend, you know, just Saturday. You like Saturday, Tuesday. Maybe you probably want your Friday, too. Actually, you probably don't want Friday because people go out on Friday. Right? So,
well, even that. I mean, you could put games on those days, right? Mm-hmm. I just think that the primetime games draw the most ratings. Sunday night and Monday night, they should just avoid during the football season. And it's funny because Mark Cuban, years ago, he called the NFL. He said they were pigs at the trough. They were mm-hmm. making money hand over fist, and they were getting greedy. And they were expanding these games on Thursday night and, you know, Saturday during the Christmas season. He goes, what the NFL has done so well is that they put their games on Sunday and Monday. You know when they are it's just those are like designated football days time. Without having to say it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for him saying that, I think the NBA could kind of follow that suit, where they could designate certain days that are NBA days, like primetime games are played on, let's say, Friday nights or Thursday nights, like what they do with TNT. TNT is okay. Thursday night, right? Why don't they hype that up a bit more?
Okay.
Make it an event. That's why people watch. That's why we watch the NBA playoffs. It's an event at this point.
That's very true, especially the first round, first, second round. I mean, every round, really. But, yeah, it's just like the NCAA tournament, but there's less upsets.
But even like Monday Night Football, you know, it's just another game on a Monday, but we just hype it up by calling it Monday Night Football.
Mm-hmm.
Like Thursday Night Basketball, whatever you want to call it.
I mean, maybe you don't say it like that, Thursday Night Basketball.
Yeah, we'll work on it.
Oh man, yeah, it's interesting because then even when if you're gonna reduce games on the schedule, like the revenue, if it's only by six games, then it's not worth it because you're not creating enough scarcity where people are gonna want to pay more money to come to games or pay more merchandise. So it'd have to be reduced by a significant amount if you're gonna get the revenue back. Because then you're just
what they make per game.
Because you're just like creating. Because if you're reducing the games, right, then the way to make money through that way is by increasing rarity of the games. So,
or truck sponsorships on the jerseys, which we're going to see more of.
Oh, dude, the death of the game. That is it right there. That is the death of basketball in its purest form.
It's a business. I hate taking the other side here, but that's what it is, right? These owners don't give a shit. As long as they turn a profit. They're making a ton of money, and they can do whatever they want. This is another toy for them in their portfolio, with maybe the exception of guys like, you know, Mark Cuban and a handful of other owners. But this is just really a toy in their portfolio.
I guess. I don't know. If it was my toys, I don't want people branding my... I don't really like people branding my stuff in general, in life. I don't really...
They're going to pay you, though. Major bucks. I'm with you.
I mean, they're not even the sponsor. What was the sponsorship? Oh, man, it's not even get off my line. It's just like I'm trying to maintain the sanctity of the game. You're not even getting paid that much money. How much was Philadelphia getting for their StubHub thing? It was like $1 million a year or something like that. So it's like, it's pennies, bro.
That's nothing in the grand scheme. Well, here, look at teams in soccer, obviously, like Man U and all of the big names out there. Does having advertisements on their jerseys change the way you view their kits?
Bro,
it's called kits over there.
When I was a kid, I never knew the name of the teams. I never understood how the teams got named because it never said their name on the front of the jersey. So I'm like, is this team just like the Chevrolet? Like the Chevrolets? I'm serious. This is what I'm not even joking. This is actually what I thought when I was a kid, because I used to watch basketball, right? And you have, it's just the jersey plus the name on it, right? So it's easily defined of who's who. But if you look at, like, if you look at Neymar's jersey right now, like, who's even... I'm going to Google this real fast. Right, we look at the jersey. It just says Qatar Airways on the front. Are they the Qatar Airways? Like, you see what I'm getting at here? Like, it's
I do.
It has this huge... huge print, Qatar Airways, and then like the crest of the team is like on the upper breast. Like it should be, if anything, it should be the opposite.
So I'm just trying to envision that right now, like a Celtics or Lakers jersey, and I don't think there's any pretty way to put it.
Yeah, they're just
put it like on the bottom. Guys are just gonna tuck it in.
Yeah, exactly. So they've been going with like the shoulder type patch to get.
What about the shorts? You put on the shorts.
You could probably put it on the shorts. If you're going to do it, you could put it on the shorts. I mean, I wouldn't be that mad. Okay, but people...
Yeah, I mean, like, most of the good shots you take are headshots anyways, right?
Yeah, and they're, like, from the waist up. So, I could live with that. I could live with the shorts. Leave the shirts alone.
I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum that the NBA faces because they can't keep having these players sit.
Like, yeah, it's becoming, like, a real deal now. Before
never
it was...
Never mind a real deal. It's embarrassing for the league.
Yeah, that's true, man. When you're playing stuff on national TV and LeBron, the worst part about it is there are two bad parts. Is when it's DMP rest, they'll be like, "Yo, are these guys just taking a nap at home," and then the second one is, "Oh, they're not taking a nap; they're just sitting on the bench watching the game." You know, like the fact that the player is at the game watching the game in their suit. I feel like that's another, like, nobody's talking about that, but I feel like that's part of the reasons. It's like, why aren't you playing, dude? You're here. You're available. You're not injured. Play. He's just sitting on the bench, like, joking around with the rest of the roster.
Well, if they're going to joke around like that, I wouldn't mind seeing them, if they want to capitalize on this market, force them to be on social media, do like a Periscope or Twitter, you know, NBA from the bench, and get it through the eyes of these superstars. Kind of like what Joel Embiid did during the rookie challenge.
Oh, yeah. Periscope maybe or like Snapchat that, you know? It or something. Okay.
Get a little sponsorship going.
That'd
be interesting. I think people would tune in and watch that.
Yeah, like, I would absolutely.
If not playing, I want to see what he's doing on the bench.
That is an
excellent. Call it like, I don't know, NBA Unfiltered or some shit like that.
That is an excellent idea, my friend. And we might have to cut that from the podcast. I'm just kidding. we should probably get like the patent, you know, like go to the patent office, copyright it, trademark it. It's like, it's ours, man.
Let's go to Shark Tank.
Oh, Mark Cuban, man. Mark Cuban. See, we have our in right there.
There we go. We're good. Did Mr. Wonderful to back it and we're set.
Yeah, exactly. And then we're off for part of the NBA. Wow. Even Bob, our friend Bob, people of the podcast that listen to the podcast don't know who Bob is, but we know who Bob is. Bob is, he sent me just an email. What a game. So
it was crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Took a 16-point deficit, but the curse is dead, if you want to call it a curse.
Yes, and it's a huge comeback for the Raptors, man. Great game.
Well, one would say the Raptors now have more life.
Oh, my God. I was waiting for you to get into this.
Most horrific segue of ever, but...
So, how long is that tour going on? Does he finally show up now?
He has to. Hey, by the way, that fan that showed up with the poster... I hope you listen to the podcast.
You better listen to this podcast.
Hit one of us up, man.
Send an email, Twitter, or something, man. That is too funny.
We gotta get you on. And now every other podcast talking about it too. I know it's trendy because, you know, Drake just dropped More Life. He's the apple of pop culture. He's the talk of the town. He's the talk of the world, to be quite honest. So I get it. But he's our Drake, man. He's our Driss.
Yeah, he is. He's still on tour.
He's got to show up.
I mean, I think he's going to show up in the playoffs, man. He has to, or else we're going to see more signs like our friend here in the crowd.
Well, they're just going to, you know, transition the brand ambassador to Nav Bhatia. He's going to become the Raptors' new global brand ambassador. That'd be
so awesome, actually.
Hey, he's recruiting at the All-Star game this year, trying to lure DeMarcus Cousins, Paul George. Anybody that was rumored to the Raptors, he was talking to.
Hey, man, you know, it's like the music's great, the food's great, it's cold, it helps you build resilience on the court, man.
He'll hook you up with cars.
Yeah, exactly. So Nav, we're on to you, man.
Let's make a deal, buddy.
Oh, man, what were your thoughts on the album? Or
I liked it.
The kids are calling it a playlist.
I was going to say, it's a playlist. Let's get it right here. Let's be politically correct. Do you think he called it a playlist for contract reasons? There's been a lot of talk about how, you know, he didn't call it a CD probably because of some contractual reason.
Right. That's interesting. I haven't really read anything about that. There's the fact that it's a playlist, I just feel like he's calling it a playlist. I think he's just trying to be trendy, some sort of trend.
Well, he could feature on every song, right? Like, he could literally just kind of pop in and say a few words and people would still be happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That's one thing I noticed is that, yes, he incorporated a lot of his favorite styles and genres into one, but he showcased a lot of other artists, more specifically the UK grime guys, you know?
Yeah.
That was something that people are criticizing him for, but I think they're just mad that he got onto something that was hot before they did, and he blew it up.
Yeah, that, and I think just people that listen to his music don't listen to grime music. I mean, I guess we would consider you and I very far outliers in anything like basketball or pop culture related, right? And we've like either we've known about the grime artists or we at least heard of them, but I don't think like your average Drake fan is, you know, paying attention.
Skepta.
Maybe they know who Skepta is, but they're not really paying attention to anything Giggs does or anything in the UK. I don't really think they're paying attention to that. So.
And what's wrong with Drake kind of branching out and doing something different? And the people ripping him for singing and being kind of poppy R&B-ish, like, you guys have been ripping him every CD he drops.
Every single CD. And it's like, bro, this is, if you're, it's gone so on so for so long, it's like, are you just, like, hate listening to it? Like, this is who he is. You know,
well,
he
has some vision. I mean, look, what's easier to do? Sing or rap? Rap's easier. So his voice is still good. So he's going to sing now. And when he gets older, guess what? He can rap then.
Yeah.
You don't need a voice to rap.
Yeah, exactly. You can sound basically like you're chewing gravel while you're rapping. That is,
yeah, what, man. Look at Future.
The essence, yeah, the it's like the essence of mumble rap is basically that you don't really need to sound. You don't really need to sound good to rap. You can make some weird sounds, right? So,
the nice little soft trap music on there too, with the flutes in the background. Not bad.
Yeah, that was great. That reminded me of the song by Migos, and it's weird that Quavo was also on it. It's called Bando.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and actually.
Ryan has the same. It's like the I don't know if it's a flute or like a piccolo or like a recorder.
I don't know what it is. I'm a fan of it.
Yeah, me too. And it kind of reminded me of that Dram song. What was the name of the song? It was him and Lil Yachty were on it. Broccoli, right? Yeah. Where they also had like the flute on it or the recorder. I think it's a recorder, man. Because it sounds a lot. It sounds a lot like my fifth grade elementary school. I remember. I remember the sound vividly. Hot cross buns, my friend.
No comment. Hey, oh, so one last thing with the album too. Before we say like favorite songs and whatnot, I love on Blem how he kind of incorporates that whole six man talk.
Yeah, and
I love that because people eat it up, but they don't really understand it.
Tell me you've seen that image of, like, a person after listening to More Life, and it's basically just, like, their iPhone. And you know how you can go into Safari and you can see multiple tabs? And it's, yeah, like, what is Skepta? Or, no, who... yeah, it's like, what is Skepta? Who is Giggs? Right? What does Blem mean? And what is a Waste Man? And I was dying, bro.
I feel like everybody knows Waste Man, but... I don't know, maybe that's just because we live in Toronto?
Yeah, if you live in, like, if you live in Minnesota, does anybody really call anybody a waste man in Minnesota?
Well, he's a waste man over there. You can already picture that stuff. No, Minnesota's not like that.
Yeah, exactly. But like, if you live in Minnesota, or if you live in like San Antonio, or if you live in like Kansas, right? This is not
Iowa.
Yes, it's not in. It's just not in your lexicon to say waste man, Blem, or if somebody. One of my favorite lines in the song, it's on Blem too, and it's like, move from me when you're extra. And that was a part of, I actually started laughing so hard because I'm Jamaican. I don't think people that listen to this podcast know that, unless you know me personally. But I'm Jamaican, right? So most of Torontonian slang is like Caribbean slang, or it's Jamaican.
Yep.
So for him to say something like that on a track, when I've heard it in my house or ever I heard it in, like, you know, parties or friends in high school or something like that, for him to say that on a song was probably one of the funniest things I've ever heard on a record in my life.
Yeah, I was crying. That whole song was basically about, like, just Toronto people in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can relate that to so many different situations and scenarios where I was just crying. I was just thinking of different people that could fit that song. I'm like, oh, my God. And they're gonna listen to it like... Yo, dog, true twos, this song talks to me. It speaks volumes to me. It's Bless. You can just hear all these idiots out there. Yeah. You know, fam? Nah, whatever, man. Just keep playing.
Oh, it's Bless, man. Oh, man. It's great. I mean, he's been incorporating it into his past few albums, but, like, this one specifically, his playlist, you know, that song specifically, it was great. That's probably my second favorite song on the album.
What's your favorite song?
My favorite song is actually Sacrifices with him and 2 Chainz and Young Thug.
Really? Okay.
Right.
I got a bunch, but I hate to sound cliche. Passion Fruit.
Passion Fruit, number one. Yeah.
It's a good one.
I understand.
Matipa Rhythm, that one's good too.
Right.
And 4422 and Teenage Fever.
Oh, okay. Bam, that's like the beginning. That's like the first 5 tracks. It's like Medieval Rhythm, Blem, Dragon, or Passion Fruit. I always say Dragon Fruit by accident. But yeah, that's that's like the beginning of the album. I feel like that gets the most plays, and that's why I think most people like it. Is like, you know, the first half an hour, you just listen to those tracks, and then it's 22 songs long, and it's. I don't know if he realizes that 22 songs is too many songs having on an album, where he can just.
He could have taken out a few.
Yeah, for sure, right? I don't know. The length is an issue with him. He's always had this issue with just like having too many songs. But I love Passion Fruit. I love Blem. I love Sacrifices. Teenage Fever is good too.
Well, you know what I did? I listened to the album first. Front to back, sorry, I can't even speak. Mm-hmm. Front to back. Then I listened to it back to front.
Ooh.
And I was like, okay. Because I just want to get a kind of a vibe of how the artist wanted to lay out the songs and more or less the mood mm-hmm. of the album. And you could see how Drake's kind of changing the tempo and the mood as he's progressing through his what he calls a playlist. Mm-hmm. So I found that pretty interesting about it.
Listening it from back to front, I have not done that before.
Try it out. See what you think.
Okay. But yeah, that was.
I don't know if it's just me being weird, but
no, I think it's a cool idea.
I know you got the whole Artist of the Month thing. I've always been a big fan of that.
Right. I might have to revisit Drake because I was thinking about where people were talking about. This is on the internet where they're trying to figure out which his best albums is from worst to best, and I was hearing a lot of different albums that I would consider not the best. Or not the worst, right? Like I like Thank Me Later a lot more than Take Care, but that's Take Care happens to be everybody's favorite Drake album, so I have a feeling I need to revisit the albums, re-listen to them.
Yeah, I feel like Take Care's kind of became the unanimous number one, whereas Views has became his worst, apparently.
Yeah, it's his worst. I thought it was his worst too, but I was surprised to be like in the majority of that, because it was such a hyped album when it came out.
I think it was his worst in context of how great every other one has been. Mm-hmm. I think that's what people forget about it. It's not that it was shit. It was just he's had so many good ones.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to be interesting, man. I'm interested to see if he shows up, and I'm interested to see the fallout of this album or playlist. And, you know, more life drops. The Raptors win. Sounds like a great week to me, man.
Hey, hold on a second. Before we go. The Leafs, too, last night, you know? I got to bring them in here.
Okay.
Think about the last 48 hours for Toronto sports. The Leafs had a monstrous win against Boston mm-hmm. to go within 1 point of third place in the East now, or in the Atlantic. And then the very next night, they flipped the court over into the hardwood, and the Raptors have this monstrous come-from-behind victory, cutting in a 16-point deficit, snapping an 11-game losing streak. When's the last time Toronto sports has had this great of a two nights? It's been a while.
Yeah, I can't even think of it, man. I mean, I probably like Vince Carter winning the slam dunk championship, and then literally just like the day after was just basking in the afterglow. Those might have been
two back to back wins for a team, though.
That's true. I don't think it's existed. So we're.
It's been a long time, man.
What a time to be alive!
Golden age of Toronto sports. We're entering it, apparently.
I thought we're in it right now.
I think we're in it.
I don't know, I can't really speak too much towards the Argos, but it feels like we're in it right now.
The Argos, I love how you included them.
How about The Rock? How's The Rock doing?
Hey, we got a rugby team now.
Do we? Let's see. News.
I don't know what they're called, but...
News. We break news here on the Tip of the Tower podcast.
Probably seen an article or two up on the site. You know, in the near future. Can't tell you when, but I gotta learn more about rugby first.
Right.
I know there's a try, and that's what I'm gonna try to do with rugby. Yeah, we're done.
Yeah, see where we're at, rugby.
This is what we've resolved to, guys.
Oh, man.
All right, I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this week's episode of the Toronto Raptors Podcast, brought to you by tipofthetower.com. As always, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Tip of the Tower. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes and SoundCloud at Tip of the Tower. You can follow me on Twitter at Chris O'Kranitz. You can follow Damar on Twitter at Damar J. Grant. Enjoy the victory, guys. We'll be back probably in a few days to talk more Raptors. Until then, take care.
Take care, guys. Shout out to Bob.